One of the most decisive moments in my life as a father occurred a year or more before we had children. It happened one day when a young high schooler, I'll call him Bob, who was part of our church, came in to see me. And as he came in and began to talk, he started to cry. 16 years old, full of all that 16-year-olds are full of, and one of them is not the desire to cry in front of anybody, but he just couldn't stop from crying. And the source of his crying, the frustration, was his dad. This was in the early 70s, and this was in the time when Vietnam was on. This was in the time when the Beatles had made their impact upon America, and this was in the time when one of the raging controversies of the day was hair. I mean, there were Broadway show all about hair. And this young guy's dad would not let him have long hair. No son of his was going to be like those Beatles. His dad was a product of the Depression, a product of World War II, and he didn't want a flag burner in his family, you know, all these things that would have been said in that time. And he just was not going to let his son have long hair. And his son came and cried. Because you see, he felt nude when he walked down the halls of his high school. Everybody else had long hair. Now, it might have been with some guys that they wanted to rebel. Maybe they wanted to burn flags. I don't know. But Bob didn't. He just wanted to be one of the guys. He just wanted to be a kid like everybody else. But it wasn't going to happen. As I listened to him and watched him cry that day, I made three decisions. The first one was pastoral. I could not lead a young person into rebellion. So I sat down with the Word and I taught him about submitting to his Father and trusting the goodness of God. And I taught him out of my own life experience when I had to make decisions like that, and some of them were very hard for me. Bob went home and he did it. It's kind of funny. Hair doesn't matter today. The guy's bald, but you know. He went home and he did it just the same because he loved the Lord. Just a young guy, 16 years old, committed to Christ, and whatever God wanted in his life, that's what he was going to do. The second decision I made was paternal. I determined that hair would never come between me and one of my sons. Didn't know if I was going to have sons. I didn't have anything at the time. But I just determined that hair was never going to be a thing that would cut me off from a son. To my knowledge, I wanted to be certain that not one of my sons would ever weep over me, but especially over hair. If I drive one of my sons to tears, I want it to be worth the effort. And hair isn't worth the effort, I can tell you that. I remember one time when Kent decided to be a trendsetter. And he wanted three sort of chevron stripes on the side of his temple, like here, you know, zip, zip, zip. This was about a year before anybody else was doing it, and he was out there, pace setter. One Sunday we came to church, and one of our good friends, the wife, walked up to Lena and said, "Oh, Lena, I'm so sorry about Ken's hair." To which Lena, who's been the barber in our family for years, responded, "I did it." I made a pastoral decision and a paternal decision, and I also made a biblical decision. And that biblical decision, because that whole conversation caused me to think about the Scriptures and how to father in a new way, and that biblical decision came from the book of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 12. And I decided that within the limitations that I have as a man, that I would strive to discipline any children God gave me God's way. As God disciplines me, so I wanted to discipline my sons. For the same reasons, even though I cannot accomplish it yet, I can follow His lead, and I can somehow get somewhat in touch with Him at least, so that what I would pass on to them would be a heritage of learning discipline from the hand of God, so they would finish the faith race well. When you come to Hebrews chapter 12, you come into a passage that's really an exhortation about finishing well. And in Hebrews chapter 12, we discover that we're going to do fathering God's way. We need to be loving. We need to be willing to sacrifice. We need to be patient. But most of all, in Hebrews 12, we must be fathers who discipline our children. Fathers who will pay whatever price it takes. And if we drive our children to tears, let it be for the price of disciplining God's way for God's purposes. And what we discover is that God is a disciplining Father. But to see this, I want you to see it in the context. What is it that God is about in our lives? Well, God wants us to finish the faith race well. He wants us to be men and women who come down that home stretch and who step across that finishing line. We may be worn out. We may be like that marathoner who ran a marathon in Mexico City. Maybe you can remember seeing that some years ago during the Olympics. When that marathoner, long after the rest of the others had crossed the line, that marathoner came stumbling and struggling into the stadium. Those who were commentating wondered where the medical people were. Somebody should stop him. But he didn't want to stop. He wanted to finish. And I may come tottering and struggling to the finish line of the faith race, but there's one thing I want to do. I want to finish. I want to finish. I want to finish full of faith. I want to finish pleasing God. It may be a struggle, it may be a scramble, but I want to be there. And that's what I want to pass on to my sons. And that's, fathers, the greatest thing we can give to our daughters and our sons, is to finish the faith race well. When we come into Hebrews chapter 12, that's exactly what the writer is exhorting. He gives us the model of others who have finished well. He tells us that we are surrounded, in verse 1, by a great cloud of witnesses. And I want you to just turn back for a moment to Hebrews chapter 11. I'm going to begin in the middle of verse 35. Here are the kind of people who have finished the faith race well. These are the kind of people who have now done their race and they've gone up in the stands to watch how we're doing. They're waiting for us because we will complete them. They are not totally finished. They are not all that they're going to be until we get there with them. And they are waiting and they are watching and they are cheering and they are testimonies to us. You can do it. You can do it. We did it. God enabled us. God will enable you. And look what God enabled. Look at the kind of people who are our models. Others were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. I'm at verse 37 now. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins. They were destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in caves and holes in the ground. But they finished the faith race. Fathers, that's our model. Men so committed to God that they will pay any price to finish the faith race well. And not only do we see that model, but we also have a motivation. Come back with me again in Hebrews chapter 12 at verse 2. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, middle of verse 2 of chapter 12. Who for the joy set before him endured the cross. Now that word endured becomes a very critical word in the passage at which we're about to look, because the word is about enduring discipline. Enduring discipline. And might I say this to us as fathers? Fathers, our chief task in life is to so focus on Christ as the center of our lives that our children see that and focus on Him as the center of their lives. This is what we're about. This is what fathering is. Finishing the faith race well by focusing on Christ that our children want to follow in the same race. Consider him in verse 3 who endured such opposition from sinful men so he will not grow weary and lose heart. When you are tempted to grow weary under the pressures of life, when you are tempted to lose heart because of your commitment to Christ and because you've taken an ethical stand in your company or a moral stand in your family, when you are tempted to quit, to turn back, to walk away, consider Christ on the cross. Look at the model. Look at the motivation. And then remember, God is your Father. And all of these struggles, and all of these issues, and all of these confusions, and all of these hurts, and when as fathers we're driven to the end of ourselves and we don't know what to do next, whether in the raising of our children, in the loving of our wives, in the managing of our businesses, in the maintaining of our health, whatever it is, all of these hardships are brought into our lives for one specific purpose, that we would be disciplined, disciplined, disciplined to finish the faith race well. They are most often not punishments. God can bring corrective punishment into our lives. But for the most part, the hardships, the struggles that we must endure do not come as punishment. They come as challenges to discipline. That's what Hebrews 12, verse 7, teaches us. Hebrews 12, verse 7, teaches us this. We are to endure difficulties and finish the faith race well. And in this passage, Hebrews 12, 7, we see a picture of God as our Father. And from this picture, I draw a core principle. As fathers, we must discipline our children for the same reason God disciplines us. My friends, it is so critical for us to understand as fathers that we must be men who discipline, but we must understand the reason why we discipline. It is not for our convenience. It is not because the kids are a bother, they're making too much racket and I've had a hard week. That's no reason to discipline. Home is not a place where we come to rest. Home is a place where we come to lead. Will we get rest? I promise you this. You lead, your wife will make sure you get rest. You don't lead? Who knows what she'll do? But the worst thing she can do is quit. Talking to you. Just a reality that I know from years of working with marriages. Fathers, when our wives stop talking to us, we're in trouble. Well, anyway, I better stop meddling and get back to my message. Verse 7. Endure hardship as discipline. Stay with the hard times. That's the point. When the track gets rough, when it's rocky, when it's confusing, when it takes sudden twists, when you're going up cardiac climb. You know, there's always that cardiac climb, especially the closer you get to the end of the race, the tougher it gets in the marathons. True in life, even more so. Endure hardship as discipline. That is, see it as an opportunity to gain discipline, to pursue discipline, to grow through discipline. Look what he says. God is treating you as sons. Recognize that when hard moments come, they come from the hand of God, but they come from the hand of God as one who has decided, you're my son. I want to develop you. I want to grow you. Now, if it weren't Father's Day, I would broaden this concept of son to be children because I think that's the concept. But it's Father's Day, so I'm going to stick with son. And I want us to understand, discipline is this. As the Father disciplines me, so I discipline my children. For the same purpose, and with as much of His insight as I can get, I'm limited, I'll show you that in a few moments, but only if I can have the same purpose. And what's that purpose? God's disciplining us to get us to focus on Christ. He wants Christ to be the center of our lives. He's moving us, moving us, moving us, narrowing things down. The trail gets narrower and narrower and steeper and darker and darker. And what's the reason? Because there's one person who can really get us through that finish line in a glory that we never ever realized we could have. And that person is Jesus Christ. And God's whole purpose in our lives as our Father is to get us to focus ourselves on Christ and to recognize the witnesses who have done it before us, who sit in the stands and cheer, and we don't even know it. And so He's telling us, discipline isn't punishment. We don't experience hardship because we're bad. We actually experience it because we're good. Look, maybe you played some sports. Remember that coach that in the heat of summer had two-a-days? Why didn't he do that? Drive, drive, drive. Water, water, water. This guy, oh, he's never going to let up. Oh, man, he must hate me. He drives in the heat of summer because he knows what it's going to take to make it in the cold of winter. Why does the basketball coach do wind sprints, wind sprints, wind sprints, wind sprints, wind sprints, wind sprints? Why? Because he knows who's going to win in overtime. It may not necessarily be the team with the most talent. It's the team in the best condition. And you see, what is happening here is this discipline is the discipline of a father who, in effect, is coaching us, is calling the best out of us, is putting us in circumstances and situations that we would have never faced on our own, only to discover what we can do through Christ in those circumstances. See our confidence surge. See things happen that we could never do. See things occur that we never dreamed of. Grasp a maturity that we could have never held. Why? Because our Father is disciplining us to make us fathers, men. He wants to make men out of us. Men of courage, men of strength, men of compassion, men of humility, men of vulnerability, men who are pushed past their limits, pushed past their ability to cover up, pushed past their fig leaves. And forced on their face to find Christ in them like they would have never known it any other way. That's what God is about. And when we respond, and when we become the kind of men that God wants us to be, there is no end to the kind of women and men our children will become. But you know, there are many fathers who don't have enough courage to discipline themselves, and therefore they don't discipline their children. For he goes on in verse 7 to say, "For what son is not disciplined by his father? If you are not disciplined, then you're illegitimate children and not true sons. One of the greatest evidences that my sons are my sons is that I discipline them. And one of the greatest evidence that other children aren't mine is I don't discipline them. I may talk about them. I may walk into the supermarket and mumble about them and say to Lena, 'What kind of a kid do you think he's going to turn out to be?' But, you know, I don't worry about it." Which he may be the guy who mugs me 10 years from now, I don't know, but it's not my responsibility at the moment. I only discipline those who are mine. And undisciplined children are fatherless children. And Father, I want to say this to you. If you are not disciplining your children with the compassion and the kindness, the gentleness and the firmness and the commitment, if you are not disciplining your children when you're fatigued, then they are fatherless children. And you know something? Your kids will push you to discipline them. You're asking for it! You know what? They are. They are. They really are. Why do your high school kids come home with these wild ideas? They know you'll never let them do it. Why do they throw this big fit? If they know you'll never let them do it, they'd be scared to death if you did. But why are they doing that? They're doing that because they want to find out, are you for real? Can I count on you? Do you really love me? My father is so strict. Now, sometimes we can be. But most frequently, what's happening is they just want us to show that we love them. This is one of the things I learned. I'd come home and my wife would give me the look. You know what the look is, don't you? I've had them all day. They're yours. Well, you know, I may decide that, okay, never mind, I'm going to watch the news. Never watch the news. Never got to watch the news. Never in this world. Why didn't I ever get to watch the news? Because they wanted me. It's amazing. My children want me. It's a little mind-blowing for me, to be honest with you. I don't fully understand that, personally. Maybe because of the way I came up in the world. Now, one of the things I learned is that I better practice preventive discipline. You know what preventive discipline is? Picking a kid up and throwing him across a room. I mean, that's preventive discipline. Shooting marbles on the carpet in the wintertime, playing soccer, taking basketball lessons from my sons as they surpass me. You know, I found discipline takes time, not only in the moment of the doing it, But in the process of the planning it, in the praying about it, remember, discipline is training and coaching. It's correcting, but it's not correcting because something's been done wrong. It's correcting because we're developing them to move forward and we're preventing something from going wrong in their lives. We're teaching them. That's what discipline is. It's the discipline of being a good teacher. That's the discipline in this passage. Why did the coach teach you the form of running? Why did he teach you how to run? Why did he go into aerodynamics some with you? Why did he get you into the right stance? Why? Because he knew if he corrected you now, before you got out there, you would succeed. He knew you could shave seconds off your time. That's why he was such a fanatic. That's what fathering is about. Oh, it's not hounding. It's not being on their case. Loving. And in that love, those incidental loving moments, that's where discipline occurs. And fathers who do not do this have fatherless children. Do you know something? The reason why we don't do it when we don't is because we aren't disciplined ourselves. We're not subject to God's discipline when we don't discipline our children His way. We're not subject to His discipline. So the great test in our lives is how subject are we to God's discipline? You see, we discipline our children as God disciplines us. God wants us to succeed, and He defines success as finishing the faith race. But if we don't have discipline, we won't do it. So my dear friends, if we do not have the discipline of our time so we can think, pray, play, teach, and correct our children, there'll be no discipline in their lives. If we cannot discipline our sexuality so we are pure, there'll be no discipline in their lives. If we can't discipline our words so we are both firm and gentle in our speech, there will be no discipline in their lives. If we cannot discipline our money so we meet their needs without overindulging them, how will they handle money? If we cannot discipline our tempers so we maintain our dignity when correcting them, what kind of dignity will they have? If we cannot discipline our fear so we are vulnerable before them, they will always cover up. If we cannot discipline our ambition so we sacrifice our success for their growth, they will do the same. If we cannot discipline our pride so we listen to our wives and understand our children better, how can we possibly discipline them? We must discipline ourselves to run the race well so our children see what a faith finisher looks like. And one of the things about discipline, one of the things that makes it so difficult is that it's hard. Verse 9, moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. Discipline earns respect. Very simple principle. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Now, that's a core biblical principle in this passage. We must submit to God to find real life. But if our children are going to find true life, it will grow out of our submission to God. Verse 10 shows the limits. Our father disciplined us for a little while. I only had so much time with my children. I can remember 16 years ago, right now, we were on vacation in Arkansas, and I said to Kent, I took him aside, and I said, Kent, you're 12 years old. I will never spank you again. I had actually not spanked him that much recently anyway. I just wanted him to know he would never be spanked again. Because the other problem was, instead of a one-minute spanking, it might be a five-day grounding. Because, you know, the results of disobedience get more expensive as we get older. But I had a limited amount of time to discipline that way. And I have no time now. 28, almost 27, 23. My time is done. Well, not only have I got limited time, but God disciplines us for our good. I have limited insight. I have limited ability. This text says, our fathers did it as they thought best. I did the best I could. I know I made mistakes. I'm sorry. But God sees good. And He's always working for our good. All hurt, hardship, struggle in our lives works out for good in God's hand. But look what else. that we may share in His holiness. God wants us to turn from death unto life, from bondage unto liberty, from shame into glory, from sin into holiness. And so He works and He works and He works. The writer makes a great observation. Verse 11, no discipline seems pleasant at the time but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Here's the thing, my friends, my dear friends, fathers, you know what we are? We're like farmers and we're sowing seed and we're working, we're working, we're working. The sun is hot, the sweat pours down off our brow, down our necks. We've got to pull rocks out of the way. We've got to cut limber down. We weed, and no weeds, these weeds cannot be killed. They have to be pulled hand by hand by hand by hand. The prime responsibility of a father as children are younger and growing up is pull weeds. That's why it's so tough. But there's fruit coming. Righteousness, the ability to relate to God and others in healthy, wholesome ways, and peace, a sense of confidence and security, of wholeness in the midst of anything in life. That's the product of effective God-like discipline. That's the product of God's discipline in our lives. It's interesting. I read yesterday on the Metropolitan page, Jacques Ellen Floyd, Dad taught lessons in a telling way. Over the years, I've gone to work when I didn't want to, paid the light bill when I wanted to buy books, stumbled off to the gym when I wanted to sleep in. I was aided by a mental propulsion device, a little burning stove in the back of my brain that says, you can't disappoint Dad. Interestingly, the serious dad talks that once made me fume and fidget have become some of my favorite memories, classic hits that have turned out to be useful time and again. That's our payoff, fathers. It's not in the work. It's not in the weeding. It's not in the pruning. It's not in the pulling of rocks. It's not in the cutting down of unneeded trees. It's in the harvest of fruit. As fathers, we must discipline our children for the same reason God disciplines us, so they will endure difficulty and finish the faith race well. I suppose the best book on fathering I have ever read is a tiny little book written in the mid-70s by a municipal court judge from Royal Oak, Michigan. His name was Keith Leanouts, and Keith had a son named Bill, and he wrote a book entitled A Father, A Son, and a 3-mile run. The book starts on a cold, crisp day late in the fall when Keith's son Bill is running in his last cross-country match, a senior in high school. And as Keith is running, as Bill is running, Keith recounts, Bill, an average kid at best, not real bright. In fact, the third grade teacher called him in and said, your son will never go to college. Isn't that nice? Paralyzed muscle in his left eye that he just had to struggle to overcome. Every sport he went out for, he barely made it. He never played. He was of no real value academically and athletically. He didn't fit into any of the things that the educational system would value. But Keith loved his son. And he tells of the sacrifice that he made for his son. He tells the fear he had that his son would grow up scarred by his struggles in school. So Keith gave up golf to spend Saturday and Sunday afternoons with Bill. He learned from the juvenile delinquents in his courtroom that the word father was a hateful, ugly word for them. And so Keith determined that the word father would be a word that would transfer to God in such a way that his sons would always want to be with God. He even shared his own struggles at times with his son as he was growing up. He resigned as judge to relieve pressure on Bill when he entered high school, so Bill wouldn't be the judge's son. He walked away from a real estate development that would have made him $2 million. And it did make $2 million for somebody else, because he didn't have 20 hours a week more to give. He wanted to give it to Bill. He took Bill camping and he taught him about Christ. And now Bill runs in his last cross-country match, never really good, but determined to make All-State. He has to be in the top 15 to make it. And the only thing that's going to get him there is his heart. His heart nurtured by his dad. And Keith Leanout writes, as he describes, as he moves from one vantage point to another, first here and sees Bill about 35th. He's counting. Then over here and he sees him moving up. And then over here and he's in the top 15. And then finally toward the end, will he make it? And stumbling and struggling and striving with everything he has, Bill comes in. And it's because of Dad. Responded to his father's discipline. So his son could respond to his. Good father, you see, makes Christ the center of his children's lives through the discipline of his message and his model. Today, by the way, Bald Bob, married, has children of his own. He's a prize-winning photojournalist for one of the premier newspapers in America. And he works with high school kids whose dads don't get it. And I made a decision, thanks to Bob. And that decision is this, that the way to measure my fathering is not to look at my sons today, and I'm proud of them and grateful to God for them. But 60 years from now, long after I'm gone, as my sons cross the finish line of the faith race, that will be the measure of my fathering. This morning I want every father in this room to join with me on our knees. I'd like you to pull the kneelers down. And I want to take a few moments. I'm concerned, fathers, about three things. There are three things that are primary that get us. They are money, they are sex, and they are power. So I begin with money. When you're faced with the choice of an ethical decision that will cost you maybe even millions, and doing right, if your daughter or son knew, would they follow your example and make the right decision? In the area of sex, when there's a challenge to our purity, what decision have we made? It's not the struggle that's the issue. As our children grow up, they will understand that there's deep struggle here at times. But how will our sons and our daughters, how would they if they knew our decisions? Would they respect us? Do we want them to follow our model? And in the area of money, sex, now power. What price are you paying for success? Is it the health and security of your children? It's not worth it. Decide today. When it comes to money, you will make the amount of money God wants you to make and discipline your children and love your wife. And that may put a significant limit on money. When it comes to sex, you will be pure. When it comes to success, your success will be crossing the finish line of the faith race well. And Lord, make the success of every father in this room that our children, our daughters and our sons will follow in our way, that when we join those in the stands and we cheer them on, that our daughters and our sons will remember how we went down that home stretch,
and they will want to join us for your glory and in your name.